Hey everyone, welcome. We're here just to talk about the suite of bills that Alberta has introduced on the topic of gender identity. And we've, all three of us, myself, Levi, John out in Ottawa, Ryan in Southern Ontario, we're all members of ARPA's Let Kids Be campaign that focuses specifically on trying to get rid of medical transitioning providers and just focus on the topic of gender identity in general. And we wanted to spend some time talking about these three bills that Alberta has introduced because they're actually one of the biggest political wins that we've seen as Reformed Christians in the last couple decades. Over the last week, we as ARPA staff actually just went through an exercise ranking what the most important and biggest political wins were in the last decade or two. And we collectively ranked these bills that Alberta's introduced on gender identity as tied for one of the top spot. So one of the most important developments, the most positive developments that we've seen in the last 10 or 20 years. So because it's so important, because it is so impactful, and hopefully because we hope that it'll lead to change across the country, we want to spend some time looking and talking to you about these bills, what they include, what they don't include, ways that we can get involved, and how big a moment this actually is. So the biggest bill actually is on healthcare. And so Bill 26, it tackles all sorts of different changes in healthcare, but there's one change in particular that is really important for the Let Kids Be campaign. Ryan, do you want to mention exactly what the bill does here?
Yeah, so the Bill 26 is called the Health Statutes Amendment Act, and essentially Bill 26 tackles the question, the whole point of the Let Kids Be campaign, the tagline for the Let Kids Be campaign is stop the medical transitioning of minors. And that's essentially what this bill does for us. The bill would prohibit healthcare professionals from prescribing puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones to treat gender dysphoria for youth aged 15 and under. It would allow for minors aged 16 and 17 to receive it if they have an approval from a parent, a physician, and psychologist. However, you know, there are no restrictions, sadly, for those over the age of 18. But the second part of this bill, it also prohibits healthcare professionals from performing surgeries for the purpose of gender affirmation on minors 17 and under. So this bill does the exact thing that we've asked for in this campaign. It is it's in large part a really great bill. So yeah, I'm looking for some thoughts. John, what did you think of this bill when they kind of came out with it?
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. Just that, like you said, Ryan, we're getting basically exactly what we asked for, certainly when it comes to surgeries, potentially slightly more flexibility, as we noted, with respect to puberty blockers at ages 16 and 17. But yeah, certainly a lot to celebrate here. I know Levi's written about how it's in line with what certain European countries have been doing. Little things to maybe quibble with in the bill. I mean, it seems to anticipate a carve out for people who've already started on puberty blockers. As one pediatrician, Dr. Less, has commented on that you know, if it's poison for some, it's poison for all. He would like to see that just stop. Even if you've already started children on this, don't make a carve out for them. So things like that, where we could you know, you could quibble, the bill could be even stronger. I think, Brian, you just alluded to, you know, maybe people aren't ready for life-altering sterilizing surgeries at age 18 either, but at least, you know, legal minors are protected. And I think there's just a lot to be thankful for here, given where we just are as a nation. So
the other you know, I don't want to sound like we're quibbling either, but the other thing that we noted about the bill that has a bit of a downside is it uses the term sex assigned at birth. Words matter. We're very big on that, recognizing that it's important to use the right way of talking and the right terminology of things. And so using the term sex assigned at birth is a little bit disappointing. You know, it is common terminology in our culture and in government agencies as well, but it should be avoided because it, you know, gives the implication that sex is something that's given to you. It's not something that is innately part of who you are as an individual. Any thoughts on that too, Levi? I know that's something that's important to you.
Yeah. I mean, that's very, very right. Like there's one of my favorite books on the whole topic of gender identity and what to think about it from a Christian perspective is a book called The Genesis of Gender by Abigail Favalli. And one part of the book that she talks about is how important language is to this entire facade of gender identity medical transitioning, that it wouldn't medical transitioning wouldn't be a thing if we didn't invent the concepts of gender identity and buttress that with preferred pronouns or chosen names or all these different things. So language is really important. And so there is some different ways the language in the bill could be strengthened to kind of have a more kind of orthodox biblical anthropology of what human beings are and where identity comes from. But overall, there's a lot of really positive things to be in here. And it's great to see, because we know that medical transitioning has all sorts of different harms for minors. Like there's irreversible harm about if you're ever going to be able to bear children after you go through a medical and certainly a surgical transition. There's some data that says that girls as young as 14 in different parts of Canada are receiving double mastectomies, like the removal of both of their breasts, to try to look more like a man. Now, we don't know if that was specifically in Alberta or in another province, but we know what happens in different parts of the country. And so it's really good that we have legislation in Alberta that's going to ban that for minors.
Yeah, and I think this bill recognizes the fact that there's other elements that come to it. You know, the fact that there's a social contagion around that. You know, the more people, specifically girls, tend to hear about transgenderism, the more likely they are to become transgender themselves. You know, you even have, you know, whole girlfriend groups coming together doing this thing. And I think this bill really does tackle that head on. And so, you know, there's a couple key little tiny points that we do have concerns with, and they're important. We don't want to downplay them, but all in all, we're pretty grateful for a pretty strong bill in Bill 26. So we're grateful that they brought this one forward and hope they continue moving it forward. And maybe there's an opportunity to tighten it up along the way through committee.
Yeah, and it does make Alberta the very first province in Canada to really limit medical transitioning for minors in any major way. So we're definitely in favor and encouraged by that. And hopefully this doesn't just stay in Alberta. It goes across the provincial borders as well. Hopefully westward first, hopefully to BC first, but all the other provinces for sure we hope it goes to.
And speaking of the social element of this, Ryan, you talked about friend groups and the kind of social contagion aspect of it. I think the next bill is closely related to that as well. A lot of our concern has been with indoctrination in the education system, right? Teaching kids that your gender is separate from your sex, the gender unicorn, and all these kinds of things. The government has thought about this as well. And there's another bill on education. Levi, can you explain that one?
Yeah, sure. So that bill is Bill 27. I hate using bill numbers because like they change every 4 years. And so like Bill 27 will be something else next time around. But right now it's Bill 27. And it does a few different things when it comes to educational policy and how gender identity works in there. One of them is to imitate other provinces like Saskatchewan and New Brunswick in restricting or requiring, at the very least, parents to be involved if their children want to change their name or pronouns at school. Oftentimes, and we've seen examples of this in the media, of people, particularly teenage girls, socially transitioning at school and not telling their parents whatsoever, choosing a new name, new pronouns, and their parents not knowing about it. This legislation will require parents to be involved in that conversation and either approve of those name changes or pronoun changes, or at least be notified if they are those students are aged 17 or 18. So that's really positive, because parental rights and parental direct over education are really foundational ideas for our educational system. So that is good to see. It's also good to see that they want to try to get gender ideology out of the classroom, because we can ban medical transitioning for minors, for example, but if our education system still teaches that you, even though you are a girl, that's how you're born, that you can still transition to be a boy if you want someday, then eventually there still are going to be lots of young people who are going to be confused about their gender and want to medically transition, even as an adult. So we do need to get this out of the classroom as well. So we're giving the government an A for trying to do that. But John, there was one particularly bad part of the education bill where maybe the government went a little too far, right?
Yeah, that's right. So one thing that's been a concern is what kind of resources are used in schools. And sometimes there's been cases where third parties have provided, let's say, sex education resources that parents have rightly found inappropriate. And so what this bill does is to say, look, any teaching material that deals with sexuality or gender has to be approved by the minister before it can be used in the classroom. So anything related to sexuality. The other thing is any kind of third party materials, and that's kind of more open, needs to be approved by the minister. And the idea is, I think, to make sure there's oversight of what schools are actually using to teach, especially on this subject. But that section also applies to private schools, to independent schools, to Christian schools. And so the result is, if there's no carve out for them, then teaching materials on sexuality, sexual morality, would technically need to be approved by the minister. And that gets us into, you know, if you're going to use the New Reformation Catechism on human sexuality, do you first need the minister's permission for that? On its face, it certainly appears that that's what the law would say. And so this seems to be, again, it makes sense for the minister to make sure there's good oversight of government-run schools. And in that sense, you know, accountability also of schools to parents. Here, when that applies to independent schools, there's a concern, again, that the minister ends up supervising things he doesn't need to, and that it's just not appropriate for him to oversee.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the intent is we want to put the power back in the hands of parents, regardless of what school they go to. But there seems to be a disconnect in the realization that, you know, a lot of independent schools and a lot of in independent Christian schools specifically are parent run. So the parents do have a lot of say in what's going on. So I think the intent is probably the right intent. But as they say, the devil's in the details. And so it looks like the details need to be addressed here.
And that's why we're calling any of you who live out in Alberta to actually get in contact with the Minister of Education and your MLA. And as we're talking about this in this entire time, like, there's a lot of incredibly positive things with this suite of bills, getting gender identity ideology out of the classrooms of our healthcare system. But in this particular case, it does pose a real threat to what Christian schools can teach on gender and sexuality. So we encourage you to go to our easy mail system and to send an easy mail to them and encourage them generally for these bills, but highlight this really crucial flaw and encourage them to say, okay, this oversight of gender and sexuality materials should only be for public schools. The minister shouldn't have the authority to do that for independent and Christian schools. Actually, that oversteps your authority. And so really, we really hope that we can raise this as a concern. So send an easy mail as soon as you can. Like, this bill is already through the first two of five steps in becoming law. I said the committee stage right now. As of recording right now, they're going to continue to sit next week, and they're going to probably make progress on the bill there. And that's where amendments really are made. So if we want this particular flaw to be removed from the bill, we need to bring this up as soon as we can and get that changed in the next probably couple of weeks, because in a couple of weeks, the legislation is probably going to pass, and then it's going to be the law of the land for Alberta.
But again, we are grateful that there's a recognition that if you want to stop medical transitioning, you have to stop the social transitioning. That typically happens at school. So we're grateful for that. It needs to be tightened up. And we look forward to you guys helping us, engaging with that, and helping get that bill tightened up as well. So send an easy mail as soon as you can. We do have one specifically for that at easymail.arpacanada.ca. And so, John, that brings us to the bill that you wanted to address. It's somewhat tied to education as well. It has to do with sport.
Yeah, that's right. So the Bill 29 is the Fairness and Safety in Sport Act. And it basically has two stated objectives. One is to make sure there are female-only sports categories, right? That's biologically female, of course, to be fair to girls and to keep them safe. And just to kind of explain the breadth of this bill. So that would apply to schools, but post-secondary, secondary and elementary, but it would also apply to different provincial sports organizations, nonprofits that organize sports leagues. And the regulations will, again, kind of spell out exactly who this applies to. So, but that's the first thing, is female only categories. And the second goal, it says, is to create gender neutral divisions, to give athletes who identify as transgender an opportunity to still be involved in sports. Sports is good for people. That's the government stated next goal. How exactly it's going to do that is a little bit up in the air. I mean, this entire bill just says the minister is going to pass regulations. The minister is going to pass guidelines. The only thing it actually requires is that schools and certain sports organizations have policies, and the policies have to address who is eligible for what category. And then they also have to report to the minister what categories do you have? What criteria do you have? Oh, and also, has anyone asked for, co-ed leagues or co-ed teams or co-ed divisions? And it seems like the government is going to kind of wait and see. It seems like it's going to be hard to create a co-ed category in every sport. It probably depends on how many people are asking for one. Are there enough people to form a co-ed league or a co-ed category? And so that's just not mandated here. It's just the government's stated goal is to say we're going to require reporting, we're going to require people to adopt policies, and then we're going to give you guidance on those policies. Again, all with the stated goal of making sure there are female-only categories and, if possible, co-ed categories for sports.
So to try to clarify that a little bit more, John, is it basically true that this bill basically is the government telling other organizations to do something, tell us what you're going to do, and we're going to provide feedback on you, but we're not going to tell you what to do in general, right?
That is very well said. Yes. I think if you're going to ask the government, is this bill not, you said it was about protecting female-only sports. They'll say, don't worry, the regulations will do that. But if you read the bill, there is no mandating, female-only sports categories in the bill itself. So,
but it does have, the one thing that we can kind of hang on to is that the stated objective is, and to quote the bill, to ensure biological female athletes are able to compete in biological female-only divisions.
That's right.
And then because that is the stated goal of it, yes, there's holes. Yes, how that's going to practically find its way out. I guess we got to hang on to the fact that there is a stated goal to ensure that biological females have divisions specifically for them, to address the issue of fairness and how many times that females have lost spots on the podium, and then by extension things like getting what are they called? Getting led into higher learning and, as a result of that, getting scholarships, that sort of thing.
Sure, sports scholarships.
Getting sports scholarships due to, getting pushed down podiums or off podiums altogether. Those are real issues, and the issue of what is good and what is right and what is fair. We hope that this can get addressed, but we really wish that it was addressed more pointed in the actual legislation rather than have to go make more policies and procedures outside of the legislation.
Yeah, we were just noting that even before we started hitting record here, is that there's a general tendency at all levels of government, regardless of political stripe, to basically pass what is called enabling legislation that gives broad overarching ideas of what they want to do, like creating women's only sporting categories and sporting programs. But then leaving it out to the executive branch, the ministers, the ministerial offices, the bureaucrats to spell it out all in regulation. That just makes it harder and harder for regular people to understand what legislation actually means, what it says, and what the rules are. But in this case, it's supposed to be used in the right direction, and we're very thankful for that.
Agreed. But they almost seem to forget that maybe someday they won't be in office anymore and somebody else will be making those regulations in their place. But seems a little short-sighted. But again, stated purpose of the bill we can be grateful for, and we hope that we can kind of encourage them to do right by policies that align with the stated purpose as well.
Mm-hmm. Any final thoughts on any of those three bills, John or Ryan?
I hope this is a step towards also clarifying the province's human rights law. I'll just say that. I think one of the reasons that in a lot of the rest of the country we've had males competing in female sports categories is because of the ways that human rights law has been interpreted. Gender identity has been added as a protected ground in human rights law, and it basically ends up trumping sex as a protected category, right? So sports leagues do discriminate. The question is, are they discriminating based on your self-identification as male or female, that with no reference to your actual biology, or are they discriminating on the basis of sex? Obviously with sports it makes sense to discriminate on the basis of sex, not with your own psychological self-concept. That doesn't really affect your physical performance. I know I'm simplifying things a bit, but I think this kind of calls for clarification in human rights law of when does sex need to trump gender identification when it comes to equality and non-discrimination, because frankly right now gender identity is trumping sex in a lot of areas where it shouldn't. And so this is a step in the right direction in sports, but I think that that question needs to be addressed in a lot of areas of public policy. So,
yeah, that's a great point, John. So just to wrap up, we do want to leave it with you guys and everyone who's listening to send a note of encouragement to the Alberta government for the positive work that they've done here. We know and we've heard that LGBTQ groups are mobilizing like crazy, encouraging their members to send as many emails and phone calls as they can to the Alberta governments and MLAs and ministers to try to get this not to be passed or try to change it or just try to discourage them. And if we do want these really positive policies passed, then we need to reach out to encourage them. So reach out by phone, by email. There's a petition online even that you can sign to voice your support for the government's changes here. So voice the support and encouragement, but then also don't forget to highlight the one flaw in the education bill, the one that would require Christian schools to have their Christian materials on gender and sexuality double-checked by the minister before they use it. Point out that flaw, ask for that only to apply to public schools, and then hopefully Alberta continues to blaze the trail on these provincial policies and other political parties, different stripes, different provinces can pick them up and you can finally really start letting kids be across the country.
So would be wonderful.
Would be wonderful. Okay. Well, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out. We're more than happy to answer them, engage on this. But yeah, thanks for listening.
Take care.